All right, everybody, welcome to our Future Melbourne Committee meeting number 62 on this Tuesday, the 20th of August 2019, and we are declaring the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public. Thank you for being in attendance here this evening. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Boonwurrung and the Woiwurrung Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay respects to their elders past and present. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Today, we are proud to say that Melbourne remains a significant meeting place for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is being streamed live on the City of Melbourne website. An audio and video recording will also be published on the Council's website by close of business tomorrow. Just to let everybody know, whilst we do try to avoid filming members of the public who attend this evening, there is a possibility that your image will be inadvertently captured during the live streaming process, so please take this as notice. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available on the City of Melbourne website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of our council business team at the end of the meeting. I request at this time that all mobile phones be turned off, or if you could just check them to make sure that they're silent so they don't interrupt the procedures of the meeting, that would be fabulous. The agenda this evening comprises three reports from management, and an apology has been received from Councillor Jackie Watts. At this time, we wanted to take a moment to note and to say that all of us here at the City of Melbourne were absolutely shocked and saddened by the tragic incident that took the life of Professor Alison Milner at Royal Parade last week. We'd like to share our very deepest sympathy with her husband and family, as well as her many friends and colleagues at the University of Melbourne. Alison was highly regarded as a friend and a colleague by many people at the university and throughout the community. And the shock of what has happened and the way in which it happened has been felt deeply by everyone. At the City of Melbourne, our staff are working closely with other experts to determine the cause of the incident, and they're testing and monitoring other trees in the area. While our words we appreciate cannot ever provide as much comfort as is needed by the family at this time, we are taking this opportunity to express our heartfelt condolences on behalf of everybody at the City of Melbourne. I advise members of our committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour of it, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. We're up to disclosure of conflicts of interest. Councillors, if anyone here has either a direct or an indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered this evening, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of the item. Confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting, councillors. We are underway. I am calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 61 held on Tuesday, 6 August 2019. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. And I'm looking for a councillor to second. Thank you, Councillor Pinder. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. And it's unanimous, so I can declare that motion carried. Thanks, councillors. Matters arising from the minutes. Councillors, I'm asking you, are there any matters arising from those minutes that you would like to address at this point? Nope. Thank you very much. Now, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code in relation to Agenda Item 6.1, Planning Permit Application TP-2015-1203, 28-32. I'm going to get this wrong. I never can say this properly. Albemarle? Albemarle. Thank you to the locals. Albemarle Street, Kensington. There's a request to speak from Akemi Trail, who is from Tract Consultants Pty Ltd. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Mooney Ponds Creek Strategic Opportunities Plan, we have a request to speak from Chris Thrum. I'm just looking. Can I see Chris? He's just coming. What perfect timing that is. I should have done a drum roll for you, Chris. Thank you for your request to speak on item 6.3. And we've had items of correspondence from Matthew Peckham, Kay Odie and Chris Thrum. I advise submitters that you will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is being considered. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is our intention to adhere to the time limit this evening. To assist you in managing that time limit, we have a countdown clock on the wall. It does a beep at the completion of 2 minutes to let you know that you've got 1 minute left, and then it does more beeps at the end of the 3 minutes, at which time... Oh, that's the live streaming. It's working brilliantly. Bit of a delay, just in case. Thank you. The swearing, the swear box, that's right. So when you hear those final beeps, if you could just finalise your presentation and take a seat, that would be fantastic. The other good news is that for our future Melbourne Committee meetings, we get to have question time. We have 15 minutes at the start of every meeting and 15 minutes at the end of every meeting for members of the public to ask questions. And we ask that they please be questions, not submissions. They take no longer than 90 seconds for putting the question, and then we look forward to being able to respond. And so we're going to start that 15 minutes question time now. If you have a question, could you please raise your hand? We'll get names and then we'll call you up one by one. Any questions? I've got a question from Stephen Main. I think you might be the only one, Stephen, so come on up to the podium. And if you don't mind, as you probably know, flicking on the microphone would be fab. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good evening, Lord Mayor and councillors. Firstly, terrific that you're continuing to run Australia's most liberal and flexible public questions regime for a council. Four opportunities a month, 15 minutes, no notice, no restrictions. So it's a terrific... Far from the 90 seconds, yes. So, yes, that's true. That's true. But no... I guess I was saying no personnel restrictions between staff, non-residents, journalists, fellow councillors. Anyone can get up, which is good. So my first question is, are any of the 10 assembled councillors here tonight, have any of them made a definitive decision not to recontest at next year's election?
This on. Stephen, I'm not sure that's the best, this is the appropriate forum to be talking about next year's election. I think maybe if you have a burning desire to know, maybe write to each councillor and they can respond to you personally. Right. Councillor's happy with that response to that question? Thank you.
Well covered, yes. Question on the Boyd situation. So unusual to have a large commercial transaction with PDG at Boyd and at Munro. Can you tell us about whether there were how many other parties there were in the Boyd process, whether there was multiple that actually formally tendered to take on that responsibility? And was there any connection between Boyd and Munro? I mean, not directly financial, but, you know, is it just a coincidence? Or how did that come to be that you had the same developer on both deals?
Good. Well, Rob Adams is away, who ran the process, but I'm going to look to our CEO to respond. Thank you.
Lord Mayor, I will need to take that on notice. I just don't have an answer at this meeting, so I'll take it on notice and I'll get back to Stephen Mayne after the meeting.
All right.
Okay, so we'll be able to come back to you. We'll take that question.
What we can clarify is there is no relationship between the two sites. That's absolutely clear.
Yeah. Okay.
Two independent processes.
And the $333 million sale of the completed Munro arrangement to Mirvac for a build to rent, can you tell us anything about that? Did we have to give approval for that to happen, for instance? Was that a surprise to council to have the sale to a third party before construction had even commenced?
Again, I think the details of that might be something that we take on notice and come back to you fully, but certainly there were no surprises, and from the point of view of having a good range of housing options in Melbourne is something that has been discussed and welcomed by councillors and staff. But in terms of how that arrangement happened, I'm not sure anybody here could give you particular detail on that, given it is a private transaction. So why don't we take it on notice and see what we're able to find for you?
Okay. Just one final question. Was particularly pleased to see the special committee established to approve the planning scheme amendment proposal on the gambling policy and the strength of that policy, and the fact that the council has gone for something even stronger than came back from the panel, which was a really good signal to everyone who's interested in gambling reform in the city. It is interesting that City of Sydney has more than 200 pokies venues in it, whereas City of Melbourne's only got the 8 plus Australia's biggest pokies venue at Crown, but it's a very, very big difference, and that policy, if approved, will keep those numbers very much restricted in line with Council's long history of contesting proposals for new venues. So I guess my only question is, have we had any indication back from the Department or the Minister as to whether there's going to be a favourable outcome in terms of our request for that, and is there any indication on timeline for a decision on that?
I'm looking here. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Thank you, CEO.
Yeah, so certainly, Lord Mayor. We've had no indication back from the Minister yet. It's only been it's only been there for a week in terms of the timing of that decision made. So we look forward to hearing back shortly.
All right. And will the committee stay formed? Is that a permanent committee effectively, or is it a special purpose?
So it's a special purpose. It was set up to deal with the specific policy.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Lovely. And it's great when question time is used, so thank you. There's still 15 minutes at the end of the meeting as well, so something to look forward to. I am pleased to move to item 6, which is reports from management, and I'm going to call on Councillor Rees to take on the role of chair of the meeting.
Thank you very much for that, Lord Mayor. There is one report from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening, and that's the planning permit application TP 2015. That's right, 2015-1203 for the property 28-32 Albemarle Street in Kensington. There have been, I know that this has been around in the system for a long time, there were 69 objections to the original application, so I'm going to suggest to councillors that we receive a brief presentation from officers just to bring everyone up to speed on where we've got to with this application. Officer Evan Council, please address us if you may. I'm playing that as the call of the night.
I'll stay on this side of the table if I can, Councillor Rees, thank you. as Councillor Rees identified, this is a property in Albemarle or Albemarle Street, your choice, in Kensington that has been with Council since 2015. Can I get some help with the slides, please? Just next slide. The property is located there. Notably, to the direct north of the site is a development which council recently considered, which is commonly referred to as the Assemble proposal, an apartment scheme of 8 storeys above a retained heritage building, which I believe is just commencing construction. There's also an approval for the site at 57 to 61 Hardiman Street for a 4-storey street wall and 6-storey apartment building sitting behind that. And the site there at number 30 is the site that we're looking at this evening. Next slide, thanks. That is an aerial shot of the site. You can see there the heritage building to the top left of the site. The frontage, which is proposed to have, or the vacant portion of the site on the southern end there, which is proposed to have 4-storey townhouse-style development, and the building, the site just behind, which will have a 6-storey proposal. The basement level of this development, this is proposed to be a 6-storey apartment development with some office and retail at ground level. At basement level there is car parking as well as some bicycle facilities. Up to the ground floor, please. At the ground floor there you can see a well-managed scheme of communal entrance as well as home office on the southern end of Albemarle Street, a retail tenancy at the northern section of Albemarle Street with an office tucked into Little Hardiman Street there, adjacent to the vehicle entry and the main bicycle storage area. The first level of apartments, a fairly typical layout there, predominantly 1 and 2 bedrooms, notably with a light court on the right-hand side of the screen there, which is carried up the building to deal with the adjacency to nearby properties. Next, please. A similar layout on level 2. And then at level 3, you see the building step back from Albemarle Street and also from Little Hardiman, and the light wells surrounding the site become prevalent. And then again, stepping further in at levels 4 and 5 for typical levels there. And the final shot of some streetscape perspectives. You can see on the bottom of the screen there, particularly the dotted outline on the right-hand side represents the proposal on the adjoining site with the 3 to 4-storey townhouses, and shows visibility of the 6-level building proposed here sitting comfortably behind it within the streetscape. A notable positive attribute of this scheme is that the street wall is constructed of red brick, which is representative of the industrial heritage of the area, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Evan, I just want to clarify, I mean, this is an urban renewal area. We have received a lot of applications. There is change going through this through this corridor. The proposal on the to the north of this site, the Assemble proposal, that's coming in at 8 storeys, is that right?
Correct.
And then the proposal we're looking at tonight was originally for 8, now before us at 6, and then to the south you've got a proposal that's been approved at 4, is that right?
The proposal to the south is 4 along the street frontage, but the street wall height in metres aligns with the street wall height of this development. This development has a commercial use at ground, so the floor-to-ceiling heights are higher, hence 3 storeys instead of 4, but in metres it will be a similar height.
So I guess what I'm trying to... That's good to hear. I guess what I'm trying to get to here is just to understand that your team and the broader team have thought about how these 3 sites sit together in terms of the development applications we've considered.
Most definitely. The team's done an exceptional job of working with all 3 applicants across this section. It's a really sensitive spot within an urban renewal precinct where you have lower scale housing across the road, and that's been managed and very well, and I think that can be seen in the detail of the report where the scheme's been amended 3 times, the scale of street wall and overall height's been greatly reduced, and originally the application had 63 objections. A second set of drawings was circulated to the community, which I think received 15 objections, and the final scheme only received a further 2 objections. So I think it's a long story, but it's a good story, and all 3 developments do speak very well to each other in terms of transition and context.
Any other questions from councillors? No. Thank you very much, Evan. Appreciate that. I now call on Akemi Trail, who requested the opportunity to address the committee this evening in relation to this matter. Welcome, Hakimi, as you know, you have 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, councillors. Just a quick note, Kemi is apology tonight. She's got to go home and look after a sick child, so I'm filling in. My name's Angus, still with Tract, still on behalf of Pirina Marina for this application.
Thanks, Angus.
Not a problem. Thanks for the opportunity tonight, and thank you for the officers for the sustained effort over the past 2 years. As Evan said, it's a long story, but a good story. It's by no fault of the council that this application has taken 2 years. It's been various iterations of the design. We've gone back to the drawing board, didn't respond to council's comments, and we just want to make that clear that we think this has been an exceptional outcome so far. More importantly, we want to say that we fully support the officer's report, we fully support the draft conditions, and we're more than happy to accept those as are. We don't propose any changes to those. To give a bit of context to the application, there has been three iterations of this design, three rounds of public notice and consultation, and we note in the first round there were 63, I think, objections that were received. The second round that reduced to 15, and the third round that reduced to 2. We feel that we have responded greatly to council's comments and the objectors' comments to bring this scheme from the original 8-storey scheme to now a 6-storey scheme, and we believe that it's now strongly supported by the preferred street wall height and overall height of the DDO in this area of Kensington. There's really not much else to be said apart from some of the changes that we made to the application, so I'll just quickly run you through those, then I might wrap it up there. So in response to the three rounds of notice and council's comments, there was a reduction in the building height from a maximum of 6 storeys. A reduction to 6 storeys from 8 storeys. The street wall was reduced to 3 storeys, both of which comply with the mandatory height and wall setback limits specified under the DDO Schedule 63. Number of apartments reduced from 52 to 34. The facade and upper levels were broken up via a series of balconies and walls and varied building materials, incorporating some of the red brick of this area. And that provides some additional articulation to make the building read better in the streetscape. There's now an oversupply of 4 car parking spaces and 5 bicycle parking spaces. There's revisions to the internal layout of the apartments to comply with Clause 58, otherwise known as the Better Apartment Design Standards, and that came about while we were amending the application because they weren't in force when the original application was made, which we think is a great outcome for amenity. And we've supported council with additional information regarding ESD, waste, acoustic, and traffic management in relation to the concerns raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that, Angus. Any questions for Angus from Tract? Yes, Councillor Oak.
It's the question I ask most planning meetings, so you may or may not know. I think it's interesting. I totally acknowledge all of the work, and I appreciate the work between yourselves and council team with all the changes. Was there any consideration to actually provide a bike park per dwelling? Because I think it's interesting the term oversupply of bike parks when there's not even one per apartment.
Sure.
It's not really oversupply. It's just oversupply within the rules, within the planning scheme,
yeah,
which is totally inadequate and really needs to change. But so I don't know. I'd just be interested if there was any other consideration or any consideration to actually provide a hoop per dwelling, given the location of this development in this area, so that everyone could have a bike, not just half the apartments.
Sure. You may have to forgive me. I've been briefed by this on a Kemi. I wasn't involved with the application from start to finish. The only metric that we generally work towards is Clause 5234, which may or may not be an oversupply, and totally understand the comments taken on board. We note that recently there have been pushes towards 1 bicycle parking space per dwelling, and in the event that this was applied to this site in this context, we more than likely would have done that, but going off the statutory controls in place now, it wasn't adhered to, unfortunately.
But there's statutory controls, and then there's what you could actually provide to the future residents. So would it be something that you could consider actually having 1 bike park per dwelling?
Sure.
I mean, I understand it's not a condition and I'm not proposing, you know, if it was amenable to the client to actually consider it,
yep,
we could add it as a condition. I mean, I'm looking at the plans and I can see where the 15 bike spaces are, and I don't know, maybe there's hoops these days that you can add more than 1 bike to, but it just, yeah, bugs me every time that it says oversupply when there's not technically.
So. Absolutely. I might put this question
to that'd be great.
Our client who is here tonight. Right. Would you be happy?
Is that something we could consider?
Yeah, something we could consider.
So how do I formally do that, Mr.
Do we commit to it? Are you happy to commit to one bicycle parking space per one? Not at this time, unfortunately. Sorry, I'm probably not speaking in the microphone.
So possibly a way forward on this is, as you've acknowledged, Councillor Oak, it's not within the planning scheme for council to be able to require what you've requested, but perhaps you could take the question on notice. And again, we're not going to put this in a recommendation, but you could perhaps commit to writing to the council to update us, having given further consideration to providing further parking for biking,
absolutely,
for bicycles on this site.
More than happy.
Okay. All right, any other further questions for Angus on this matter? All right, thanks, Angus.
Thank you.
Cheers.
All right, as the Chair of Planning, I'm happy to move a motion which should be going up on the screen there. There it is. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Rohan Leppert. I will speak briefly in favour of this recommendation. Look, as we have heard from officers, this part of Kensington has been designated by this council as an urban renewal area. That does mean that it is a part of our city which is going through change. As councillors, we very much feel the cut and thrust that sometimes comes with change in parts of the city. And we've obviously seen it with this development, which when it was first lodged attracted some 69 objections. I'm very pleased to note that over the almost 4 years that this has been through under consideration, going through planning consideration, it has gone through a number of iterations and it is a significantly improved proposition to what was originally lodged. We have seen significant improvements in design. We've seen the proposal go from 8 storeys to 6. I'm particularly pleased to see that we now have a red brick street wall, which I think does reference the heritage character of this area and will just improve the overall character of the area. And look, I think as a reflection of those improvements, we have seen the number of objections decrease at each stage from 63 to 15 to 2. I want to commend City of Melbourne officers for the great work they have done on this journey. Sounds like a reality TV show, but it has been a journey. And I also want to particularly note the work that's been done to make sure that the development we're seeing to the north on the assemble site and then the site to the south, the 4-storey terrace houses, they all reference each other in a way which will make a neighbourhood and protect the neighbourhood character of this area. Finally, I will note that in the recommendations in the report, there are quite significant, I think, recommendations which will further improve on this proposal. So there's the identification of the facades strategy, which we have spoken about. There is the requirement for screening of west-facing bedroom windows, which is important for privacy for the nearby neighbourhood. A real bugbear of mine, I'm pleased to see there'll be no cooling or heating units located on the balconies of less than 9.5 metres. And also the outward opening doors under the public realm are required to be redesigned to comply with the council's road encroachment guidelines. There are many others, but there were some that jumped out at me. So with those things all considered, I am very pleased to support the recommendation before councillors. Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. I support the recommendation as well. Thank the applicant, thank the officers for working through it. The original application was advertised in April 2016, and we just got to remember that that was 2 months or 2.5 months or so before Council adopted a final form of Amendment C190 Part 1, I think that a large number of those objections, and we certainly had people coming in July at our FMC meetings, or was it August, to talk about what form the controls should be. So I think a lot of the objections for this site, whilst they were all very, very real objections, and I'm not undermining them in any way, were also proxies for submissions to Amendment C190. So I think that that's why we saw an unusually high number of objections, and it's why when you've got 69 objections, we don't actually have any of those objectors here to submit in opposition to the proposal. So I think that part of the history is significant, because I've been trying to figure out, like others perhaps, why the public gallery is so small for such a popular or unpopular, on paper at least, application. But it shouldn't be unpopular, because it conforms with the new controls that we've slaved over for many years to get right, and which are continually being reviewed in line with the Minister's directions. But this application definitely does conform. The setback above the street wall, which is utterly consistent with its neighbours, is appropriate, and I think this building's going to sit well within the context of not only an urban renewal area, which it's in, but the broader community on which it's the edge of. So congratulations to all involved, and the conditions are going to make the application even better.
Okay, are there any councillors who wish to speak against the motion? Are there any other speakers for the motion? Councillor Pinder.
Thanks, Chair. I only want to say that a couple of weeks ago I was in Macaulay Road at the Assemble sod turning, and met quite a few of the future residents, and I think this proposal really sits very, very comfortably within that little pocket of Kensington that as Councillor Rees just said, will turn into a beautiful neighbourhood. So thanks, Angus, for your team and what you've done, and of course the officers. I think you've worked really well together to bring about a good result 3 years on.
Any other speakers for or against the motion? Oh, Councillor Oak.
Oh, thank you, Councillor Rees. Oh, just following on the bike theme and from Councillor Pinder. Last time we did, when we last spoke about this pocket, as you say, when we approved the Assemble building, I acknowledged that it is a very busy cycling corridor along Macaulay Road, and acknowledged that the numbers are increasing. And I guess this is another request to officers to make sure that they're, you know, considering this section of our community, especially with the increased density, that the cycling lanes are vastly improved, but also other access around that area with pedestrian crossings as well, with more and more people accessing Macaulay train station and hopefully the Moonee Ponds Creek when it's all in its splendid glory, but also walking along and accessing the Capital Cities Trail. But anyway, just acknowledging that more people in this area, we need to focus on other transport routes as well.
Any other speakers for or against the motion? All right, well, in that case, I will conclude just by, again, welcoming that discussion and noting the, through you, Angus, the commitment to, while it's not in the recommendation, writing to us and giving consideration to further bike parking opportunities as part of this development. But on that note, put the matter to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. I declare that carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Oak to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Environment Portfolio.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. There's one report for management for consideration under the Environment Portfolio, which is also under the title of Planning for Growth as well. So it's a combo combo theme, it's about planning for growth in Moonee Ponds Creek Strategic Opportunities Plan. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Don't want a presentation, however, I just note that there is a reference in the recommendation about the Victorian Planning Authority, and that this is a basis of the master plan. I just wonder if Krista Milne, Acting Manager Placemaking and Engagement, could provide just a brief comment about the next steps and how this does fit within the Victorian Planning Authority's plans for this area.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor and Lord Mayor. As you've noted, implementation will be critical. This is essentially an advocacy document, as we don't actually, council doesn't own or manage any land within the corridor, so working through the implementation is critical. The VPA is leading the implementation, and that's actually as part of the mitigation package through the West Gate Tunnel project. Management is working with the VPA in a regular process to develop that implementation plan to ensure that the plan reflects what we've been working through with the Strategic Opportunities Plan. Last advice is that from the VPA is that they'll be taking that through government processes later in the year. So we haven't actually seen the content of a plan at the moment. We're still waiting for that, but we will certainly be advising, working with council, advising council on the content of that when we have visibility of that. But we're working with them through a daily ongoing processes with them. The other thing that we're involved in is the Chain of Ponds collaboration group, which is working with other councils up the corridor, and subject to approval tonight, we're signing an MOU to support working across all the stakeholders, 15 stakeholders through that have some responsibility within the Creek Corridor.
Great, thanks Krista. Are there any other questions for Krista?
Nope.
We have two submissions. I'm just going to check actually. Kay, did you want to speak to your submission or is your written submission okay? No, that's fine. So therefore, I now call on Chris Thrum to give a presentation. And you know you've got a clock to stick to, and at the minute mark it will give you a buzz, and at the final point it will give you another buzz. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Councillor Cathy Oak, councillors, Lord Mayor, men and women of the Kulin Nation. Just brief, this is just a clerical issue in regards to the report, and I'd also like to thank Krista and the team for the great work that they've done in this draft as well. You've shown deep respect to the traditional owners of the region. It's sort of all through the report you can tell that you've consulted with elders and sort of the local sort of traditional elders as well in the Moonee Ponds Creek area. And so I'm sure many people would thank you for that. Just on page 3 of 62, where you refer to all the different strategic plans and strategies of the City of Melbourne, there's no mention of the Reconciliation Action Plan of the 13 items that are mentioned. So if you guys could put in for the 14th item, the City of Melbourne Reconciliation Action Plan, that would be phenomenal. And yeah, it is a great report. And of course, with the traditional owners for thousands and thousands of years, they do respect the land and the water of the region, and this is philosophy is sort of entwined into the report as well, so we thank you for that.
Sorry, Councillor Wood. We're just talking about, at the moment it's not part of the strategic plan, but it might have been part of the original. Anyway, I'm not sure whether the CEO wanted to make a comment. So it's part of the cover report, but not listed as part of the strategic opportunities plan. But I think that it is certainly referred to as part of the process, but not directly as part of the strategic opportunities.
Yeah, if you just directly mention it on page 3 of 62, make it the 14th item sort of plan or strategy that the City of Melbourne have referred to, that would be great. But yeah, it's a great report.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, well, we have no other presentations, no other questions. I will move a recommendation on the screen, just slightly amended from the original one, just to take into to cover the issue that Kay Oddie raised in her submission. So if I can get a seconder for that. Councillor Wood, Deputy Chair of Environment, thank you. This is a visionary document for a very important part of our municipality, and in particular, we just you know, approved another development in this area where there'll be residents seeking more open space and recreational opportunities, and also wanting to have a waterway on their doorstep that actually is celebrated, and that's what this document does. I certainly acknowledge Krista and Daniel and Georgia and all the team that have been involved in this piece of community engagement, essentially, and community not just with the residents but with all of the surrounding stakeholders and landowners and other councils involved in managing Moonee Ponds Creek. So I acknowledge the work that they did, and I was a part of some of the consultation processes, and really think you did an excellent job, and I think it's reflected in the document that we have in front of us. And it is difficult. I mean, I feel it's difficult because we have such little control and ownership on this waterway, and yet we have so much interest and real desire to make sure it happens. And, you know, I've been here for too long, and in the time that I've been here, we've spoken about the Moonee Ponds Creek as a absolutely critical piece of infrastructure, and you know, that's green infrastructure, blue infrastructure, it's about recreation, it's about connection, it's about environmental sustainability and biodiversity, ecological restoration, and it's about creating a nice space for our community. So I think that, you know, the vision is there and it's well reflected, and certainly that the concept of collaboration is something that's probably the most important thing that we can do, is to facilitate that collaboration. And so the emphasis on this document is key. And where we might not have control, or certainly not the finances to fix some of the huge issues that there are there hydrologically around making it a really nice space, we might not have the full control, but we certainly, what we do well is to facilitate. And it's great to see that the Victorian Planning Authority are using, or are currently developing, a draft implementation plan and using this as a master plan document or as a basis of it. And I think that's great, but what we need to do is make sure it is a reality, and that's going to be the big piece of work from here. So I certainly acknowledge all of the community groups who have been involved for a very long time, and acknowledge Kay and the Friends of Moonee Ponds Creek, who, you know, a lot of the beauty in that part of the creek is because of the huge work of the Friends of Moonee Ponds Creek, you know, since planting there since 2000 and probably before that, but certainly since 2000, a lot of the native vegetation that is referred to in the amendment and in Kay's submission, a lot of the vegetation there is because of the community, who are really interested in making sure it is a contributing to the environment in our municipality. So I thank the community. I also thank the patience of the community. I know that officers had to sit through lots of meetings with myself and Councillor Lefford and Councillor Wood, saying, okay, but if we're going to go out and talk about Moonee Ponds Creek, we've got to talk about it in a different way, or what's different than the last time we spoke about it. And the last time we spoke about it. And I think that the team certainly took that on board and have had good conversations. Hopefully Kay's nodding, so that's good in the audience. But acknowledge that the community has spoken about their vision for this space a lot of times, and we really should then let's get all of our effort and energy behind this opportunities plan and make sure it's a reality. So I acknowledge it's a great vision, but acknowledge that it's not ours to control, and hopefully we can get everyone on board this time, and in particular finance and land ownership as well. Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. I agree completely. I think officers have done an excellent job, and in combination with the community through people like Kay, who have had a really long association with Moonee Ponds Creek. And it was interesting because I was looking at this latest document that we've got here before us and the extensive consultation that's gone on, and there's so much good stuff in there. And I think it's a really good example of using the best collective mind of the community to enhance what was a good document already. But I went back and actually read the 1992 Moonee Ponds Creek Concept Plan. So this is how long this has been bubbling along for. And as Councillor Oak rightly said, you know, it's about, you know, no one organisation sort of having all the levers before it to be able to realise the vision. And that is why this is going to be very much about that collaborative or cooperative governance model. And I think that's something that City of Melbourne does really well in playing that role about bringing all the various organisations together. You know, this is nearly 27 kilometres of Moonee Ponds Creek. It starts in Gellibrand, you know, comes through six councils, you know, Melbourne Water, the Victorian Planning Authority. You know, it's had CityLink whacked down the middle of it. You've got, you know, all sorts of pressures, I guess, that have come on what was an area that was very, you know, much an important area to Aboriginal Australians over thousands and thousands of years, and then progressively, you know, Footscray Road, Dine Road, Racecourse Road, Flemington Road, all of these various crossings, rail crossings, and then, of course, as I mentioned, CityLink going right down the middle of it. And I'm sure some people probably look at it and think, well, what are the values that are left there? But what you see really clearly from this huge consultation effort is the local communities up and down Moonee Ponds Creek really value this as a potential green spine, and as Councillor Oakes said, a blue spine as well. I think probably green and green, really, with the colours of Moonee Ponds Creek. But when you then talk about why is this the right time to be pushing this, and it's because you've got Arden, you've got Macaulay, you've got Egate, you've got Dynon. So it's not just a couple of thousand people that are going to come into this space. It's literally tens of thousands of people. And what we know is that over time, that green space becomes so critical. And again, it's highlighted so well through what I think is an excellent report. In all of the, it's not just one thing that this is valued for. It's not just about, you know, flood management. It's not just about open space. It's not just about cycling routes. It's so many things to so many people. And then you think about what our forebears did with places like Fitzroy Gardens and some of our beautiful heritage parks. And I genuinely believe that if we can get the sort of collective energy to implement the Moonee Ponds Creek vision, that it will be looked back on with sort of similar respect into the future, because, you know, again, from those renders, they've built up a real head of steam. You look at those renders and you say, that is what I want. And there's some difficulty in that because you create that belief that this can be done, but I think without that belief, it won't be done. And when we talk about how we're going to pay for it, well, you know, if you're going to plough the West Gate Tunnel through inner city suburbs, then, you know, it's time for that to stump up. There's been some money, but it hasn't been for Moonee Ponds Creek. It's been for addressing the local traffic issues through many of our inner city suburbs. And then you talk about the huge developable land opportunity that's there. So there's going to have to be contribution from that new development that comes in there, because that green spine is going to be so critical to the livability of those new suburbs. So I guess our message to, you know, all of the various partners, and this is about partnership, is that the community deeply wants this. City of Melbourne wants this, and many of the agencies like Melbourne Water want this as well. So it's time that we get the Moonee Ponds Creek concept plan into an implementation phase. And, you know, we don't want to be here, you know, in another 20 years' time talking about, you know, the Moonee Ponds Creek concept plan of 92 and then the Moonee Ponds vision of 2019 and not seeing that vision realised. So thanks so much for all your work.
Thanks, Councillor Wood. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Riley.
It's been a long time to get this to a final Moonee Ponds strategic plan, and it's been mentioned over and over and over again in many of our committee meetings and forums. But I think you're right, it has been the forgotten creek. We just didn't know how to handle it. And so now we've got to a point where, with the help of others, and we can't achieve this alone, we do require local government communities and so many other potentials to put in and help us get this right. And it will be something we will all be very proud of. Thank you.
Councillor Rees.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. First, I pay tribute to you and also the Deputy Lord Mayor for all the work you've put into this, and also to officers. I want to acknowledge Kay and all the work of the community, because these things don't come from nowhere. They come from a whole group of Melburnians who are very, very committed to seeing this, what was sadly an unloved part of Melbourne, become a lot more than it currently is. I want to single out a couple of things quickly. The first is that the City of Melbourne did a tremendous amount of consultation around the development of this plan. There were some 32 options that were tested with people through forums about what they wanted to see, and overwhelmingly an improvement of cycling and walking trails. The length of the creek was the popular favourite in those sessions. So picking up on the Deputy Lord Mayor's point, you know, I really think we need to crack on and see those upgrades to the cycling and walking paths along there, along with all the wonderful things as well. But I think we really should acknowledge the tremendous support there is for those cycling and walking upgrades. I also want to note that in an earlier draft of this document on the Macaulay Terrace, it was called, on page 23 and 24, there was an image of two children playing by a flooded creek. And I want to thank the City of Melbourne officers for now moving those two children a safe distance away from the flooded creek. We can walk and chew gum here at the City of Melbourne, and so there's a water safety message there now, as well as a great bit of urban planning. So well done for fixing up that small point. On a sadder note, however, if you turn to page 27 and 28 of the strategic plan, you've got something that is evocatively titled a tidal underpass, and that shows where the Westgate Tunnel road project is going to intersect with the west of our city. And looking at that picture, I think it's fair to say that no amount of architect's trees can cover up the fact that that is an urban monstrosity. And yeah, I think it's a matter of great regret that all that land on the doorstep of our city is now going to be locked up for decades by that huge road project. Yes, we do need better road connections to the west, but it's a matter of a great regret that it's been executed in that way so close to the central city.
Indeed. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. On that, I'm grateful to the officers for adding the text at the bottom of that image. The City of Melbourne is not a proponent of the Westgate Tunnel project. Just in case it wasn't 100% clear to everyone, I'm delighted that's in. Thank you. There's been lots of changes that have been made throughout this process, and I want to thank everyone who's made submissions and the officers for continuing this work to get there. Deputy Lord Mayor talked about the 1992 concept plan. I think I can go one better. I went back to read the 1873 Royal Commission report to both Houses of Parliament, chaired by Mayor of Melbourne, Fenwick, I think, at the time, which identified a lot of the same issues that we're talking about today. The issues in 1873 were caused by the same issues that have been caused now. Government neglect and government under-regulation of what became a dumping ground. This Melbourne City Council treated the mouth of the creek as its first unofficial tip, and eventually that became an official tip. The toxicity in the soils ever since stems from that those early days of under-regulation and the City Council's neglect of not just Mooney Ponds Creek, but from Blue Lake generally and all of the surrounding areas. Of course, the government neglect and the mistreatment of this really important corridor has continued ever since then, whether it's been the concreting of the creek, particularly further upstream from the parts in our municipality, whether it's been the CityLink freeway and then the east-west link stage 1B, which was going to match that freeway with another freeway on the western bank of the creek, putting the entire creek under effectively permanent shadow. Or whether it's the Westgate Tunnel project now, which, of course, throughout the City of Melbourne is not a tunnel, by my definition of the word, at least. But the creek and the corridor is loved. Government mightn't have loved it, but I just want to pay testament to the many, many hundreds of volunteers over the years who have looked after this part of our municipality, even when the massive freeway has gone up for CityLink over the top, putting much of the creek corridor under the shade and putting all of the eastern bank under concrete for the most part, that we have a lot of seriously dedicated volunteers in our community who truly understand the ecological value, but the social value as well that comes from maintaining this area of very informal public open space But in recent years, there has been a change in the animal life in particular that comes to the creek, and it's not because of the work that government has done, it's because of the work that locals do to make their community a better place. So I want to pay testament to all of them as well. I know that that sentiment is shared. The real work is yet to come, and I know other councillors have said this, but we commissioned a master plan in 2014. We decided we need another year, so we commissioned the master plan in 2015. We decided we need another year, et cetera, et cetera. It's now 2019. The reason for that is we are advocating. This isn't land that we control, and we wanted to get all those ducks lined up so that we could demonstrate a plan that had broader connection. At the end of the day, and I don't want to put a negative note on this at all because the work here is exemplary, at the end of the day, as has been presented to us, this is still an advocacy document. In the meantime, we have not had a publicly articulated position about what our vision for the creek has been. It's meant that the East-West Link proposal has come and gone without us able to fiercely on the front foot prosecute a different vision for the creek because we haven't articulated one. That is not the view that other councils have taken. That is not a view that Moonee Valley took. They said, no, 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 let's articulate the future that we want and then figure out how to get there. We have, unfortunately, in hindsight, I think, even though the end result is very, very good, not been public about where we'd like to be for a good 5 or 6 years after we commissioned such a plan. And so I'm just hopeful that the payoff for that wait really is that the VPA is going to get its submissions through government, that we are going to see an unprecedented level of collaboration between council and all of the different landowners, particularly VicTrack and VPA as planners and Melbourne Water as well, and that we can return this creek to the wonderful public open space and vibrant ecological values that we are trying to get to here. But the work, the real work, is just starting. Finally, thank you, Chair and Deputy, for incorporating that amendment. As you've articulated, this is taking on the Friend of Moonee Ponds Creek submission. Thank you, Kay, as ever, for your fierce advocacy.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Are there any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Francis Gilley.
Just quickly, Chris, thank you very much for your comment about acknowledgement of the RAP in the document. I think we were talking today. Actually, we had an Aboriginal portfolio meeting and also had some other conversations about we have managed to do some really important things about bringing forward Aboriginal culture in Melbourne, but we often miss the opportunity to talk about them, and we often are not working hard enough to actually talk about the issues that we see and face and are trying to change. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. I just want to join in with a few others and say that, you know, as a chair of the transport portfolio, there is no doubt that the creek is going to suffer because of that road. And it is, as you so rightly say, not a tunnel. And as a consequence, you have, you know, a river that could be a river that could actually bring, you know, opportunities in terms of flood. It could bring biodiversity. It could bring place for people to enjoy. And that's going to be really, really difficult when it's covered again now with pillars and concrete and a road above it. And so, but I also agree that despite that, there is an opportunity, or in spite of that, there is an opportunity to create a place where there is life and diversity and place for people to meet. And so it's not ours, and I'm not hopeful in hearing what you, my colleagues who've been around and looked at the history books, can tell me that, you know, it's been 20 years and we've been talking about it. I would ask that the state government really consider their leadership role in this and help prosecute the case for something beautiful in that part of town.
Thank you, Councillor Francis Gilley. In closing, acknowledge everyone. Everyone's made some great commentary. I acknowledge that Utopia starts tomorrow night, and I just should mention that we did speak a lot about the renders. Sorry, and I'm glad that Councillor Rees raised that as part of the contribution tonight. But yes, we will be featuring on Utopia soon when we move the kid out of the waterway in the render. But acknowledge the huge work and actually Chris acknowledged the Indigenous perspectives, and I'm certainly comfortable and acknowledge that the actual document certainly takes it on board very seriously and acknowledges it right up front. So opportunities with respect to reconciliation are very clear within the document. So I'm comfortable with that, but note it should have been listed in the cover page. But other than that, acknowledging the team again, I think you've had great, well due acknowledgement for the work in here, and we're all behind the efforts to see it as a reality. So let's start advocating to the state government to actually do something about it. All those in favour, raise their hands. It's not up on the screen, but you know what you're voting on, hopefully. It's passed unanimously. Thank you. I now call on the Deputy Lord Mayor, Aaron Wood, to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to finance and governance.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. There's one report from management for consideration under the finance and governance portfolio. That's agenda item 6.4. It's the 2018-19 financial performance report, and I'd ask our CFO, Michael Tennis, to make a presentation.
All of the above. Thank you very much, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors. Look, the purpose of this report this evening is to inform Council, our future Melbourne Committee, of the financial performance for Council for the financial year ended 30th of June 2019. The preliminary result for the 12-month period shows a strong underlying surplus on the income statement of $17.8 million. This is a favourable variance of just over $4 million against the budgeted underlying surplus of 13.7, up 29 or almost 30%. In addition to the underlying surplus, council, the council is also required to reflect the comprehensive result in the annual report. The comprehensive result includes additional non-cash items, including revaluation of council assets. The council has a net asset base in excess of $4.3 billion, with land, parklands, roads, footpaths, bridges, curbs, and channels and infrastructure assets being the most significant items. The comprehensive result for council is a deficit of $183 million. This is a significant revaluation of assets, a decrement of $233 million being the major reason for that. I think that's consistent with many of the declines we've seen across the state in land values over the course of the last 12 months and beyond the state as well. From a P&L perspective, the following represents some of the key movements in the reporting period. There were some additional funds received in relation to the Metro Tunnel project. That was in regards to looking at the monies lost due to the car parking for the revenues for car parking for the City of Melbourne, and also higher building service revenue as a result of higher construction activities. These gains were partially offset by materials and services, in particular contract payments and utilities to obviously look after our parks and gardens during quite a hot summer last year, and the impacts of increasing electricity prices. From a balance sheet perspective, we are very well placed. The decrease in the non-current trade receivables in the report and the investment in subsidiaries reflects the successful divestment and rebirth of the Sustainability Melbourne Fund throughout the course of the year. As mentioned earlier, the property infrastructure plan equipment is due to the devaluation, and this is replicated in the balance sheet in our assets. The cash and cash equivalents increase. It's a slight increase on last year, and that's due to the reclassification between term deposits and other financial assets. We did have in the order of $88 million in the term deposit last year. That's now sitting in our cash, and that's more from an accounting entries perspective that those monies have been invested throughout the course of the year. It's more timing difference in terms of where they sit at year end. In terms of capital works, City of Melbourne delivered a significant program of investments and maintenance of $140.7 million, and that was $17 million greater than last year. It's also one of the highest levels of investment that the city has undertaken internally for many years, excluding the purchase of assets, some property assets which occurred back in 2015-16. We also have significant commitments going forward. Commitments on capital next year and council works are in the order of $166 million. So the cash that we do have in our balance sheet is pretty much fully committed in terms of where we're heading going forward. Full details of the key movements are contained within the body of the report, and the reported result is subject to audit from Vargo, and this will be discussed at the Audit and Risk Committee on the 29th of August, and then endorsed at a special council meeting on the 10th of September. That's all I have to add. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Any questions for Michael? No, thanks, Michael. So I'm happy to move the recommendation on screen. I'll call for a second. Councillor Oak, thank you. As Michael said, tonight, providing this is supported, we'll call a special council meeting to actually accept the comprehensive consolidated financial statements and also the performance statements. And this is, as Michael said, the comprehensive report includes non-cash items. So we always get interesting questions when people are looking at various reports, and they often go to, geez, City of Melbourne's got a lot of cash. And I think, you know, what's clear is the operating surplus is not really a great number to be looking at. It's really that underlying surplus, because so much of that cash is actually committed. So, you know, for example, the open space fund, $37.8 million, can only be spent on open space. You can't pick that up and go and spend it somewhere else. The security upgrade program, which is the bollards and all the security changes that are being rolled out in partnership with the state government, $27 million. QVM, $35.2 million. In October 2020, we've got to repay the Clean Energy Finance Corporation loan, and that's around about $28.5 million. And then the Munro site commitment is $35.7 million. So there's about $165 million worth of commitments that are, you know, coming out of our operating surplus. So it's really that underlying surplus of $17.8 million which should be the focus. And as our CFO outlined, that when you've got an asset base of, you know, over $4 billion and you're required to, you know, value those at fair value, it only takes a little bit of a change across your land values in particular, and you can end up with what is seemingly a big number. A lot of those revaluations are made up of assets which we're never going to realise, because they're our parks and open space. You're never going to sell Royal Park, for example. You're never going to sell Faulkner Park. And you're talking, you know, just for Faulkner Park alone as a bit of an example of a change in valuation of $61 million. So when you look at our multicultural hub, $18 million, Flagstaff Gardens, $15 million, as I mentioned, Faulkner Park around about $61 million, Fitzroy Gardens, $13 million, Royal Park, $39 million. So straight up, you have about $150 million worth of decline in value of those assets. So, as I said, only a small change in land values across a big asset base can deliver you a seemingly big number in a non-cash decline in your balance sheet. But overall, it's a really good result. So, Michael, to you and the team, but right across the board to the City of Melbourne and its officers, we're in a strong position from a cash sense, because we've got a huge infrastructure investment that's coming our way, and that really tells the story of growth in our city. The other thing is there's some really interesting numbers. If you dig into the report, you can see that this is the 18-19 report, but already in things like materials and services, we'd had a $2 million higher waste management and recycle processing services costs. So you could already see before we hit the recycling crisis that waste and recycling was starting to increase in cost to council. And again, you know, those sorts of seemingly small numbers across a number of areas can add up to, you know, reasonable sized variances as well. And again, some really interesting ones. If you look at depreciation, there's an unfavourable variance there of 10.8%, $7.1 million, but that was a change in valuation policy, and I don't think anyone would begrudge us for changing the valuation or the life of a mobile phone from 10 years I don't think too many people are using Nokias these days. So some interesting numbers across there, but overall a good story. We're in a strong cash position for what is a very big investment coming forward. So thanks, Michael. Councillor Oak.
I have nothing further to add other than to acknowledge Michael and the team and acknowledge as well that it is obviously through your team, but it is a whole organisational effort to get to the numbers that we're acknowledging and accepting tonight. And I'd like to also acknowledge you, Chair, for your role in chairing the portfolio. It's also a reflection, I think, of your work in the portfolio and the performance report we're receiving tonight.
I was just basking in the glory of that. Congratulations there. Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers to this item? No. If not, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously and hand back to the Lord Mayor to chair the rest of the meeting.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Well, this concludes reports from management to be considered this evening. I'm asking councillors, firstly we've got to say there are no items of general business, as we said at the start of the meeting, so I'm asking councillors, are there any items of urgent business that they would like considered this evening? None? Thank you very much. Well, we get to that other exciting part, not that it hasn't been exciting for the other three agenda items this evening, but if there are any more questions from members of the public, then time to take them now. Stephen, please come to the podium. The microphone is on waiting for you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I was just listening to that, looking at the static clock sitting at 3 minutes as all of you were delivering your excellent speeches then. And I notice it's now running for the members of the public, but it doesn't run for the councillors. So I'd just like to ask whether the council would consider, just for indicative purposes, not for statutory or not to curtail free speech, but would you consider
yes,
running the clock at future FMC meetings on councillors?
Sounds good to me. Something that we can consider internally. But, you know, I think it'd be such a shame at forums like this, as you said at the outset, that councillors don't get an opportunity to express their views on matters that come before the Future Melbourne Committee, and I think a lot of the discussion tonight has been fantastic, and I personally would miss it, but sounds like something we can discuss in councillor only.
Well, I'd just say I wouldn't propose that anyone be forced to stop speaking when it gets to zero, or even that you run an audible buzzer. It would only be an indicative measure for the community as we look at you, because you're running a clock up there.
Is there a question, Councillor Mayne?
Yeah, so thank you for indicating your potential interest in that. The cash is up from, I think, $70 million to $120 million year on year, which is terrific. I'm interested to know the City Square compensation contribution to that. Is that the biggest single driver in the increase in the cash over the year?
The biggest increase was the reclassification of the
deposits, right, yeah, okay. All right. And, Councillor Wood, that was some excellent detail on the write-downs. I'm just wondering if you have the Munro number as well in terms of the change to valuation.
Yeah. Yep. I think it's about $5
million. Right. Okay, so it's not a big number. Yeah, okay. Okay. All right, just two more. I notice there's been a dramatic reduction in the number of motions put up by councillors over the past 3 years. I'm interested, I don't know if maybe someone who's served over multiple terms might have some thoughts. Is the biggest driver of that the change to the meeting procedures where you need two councillors rather than one to put up a motion? Has that been a factor in that reduction?
No.
No, okay. Discipline. All right. Okay.
We lost a councillor called Councillor Mayne, and it just dropped off after that.
But there hasn't been a case of councillors were wishing to put up motions and weren't able to find a seconder. So it has just been the way the councillors have
have conducted the governance. Okay, thank you for that. Now, Lord Mayor, you're, I think, on the record saying that you're intending to recontest at next year's election. So I appreciate your deft response to the earlier question, but I will still ask this one. Can I just remind you that there aren't any topic restrictions on public questions? So are there any councillors who've also, like the Lord Mayor, made a firm decision to recontest at next year's election and who'd like to say so at this meeting?
I think we confirmed that nobody wanted to say anything earlier, but I'll just look at my colleagues and I can't see anybody wishing to say anything at this point. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Lord Mayor.
All right. Any other questions from the public? No. Well, that calls us to say thank you very much to public management and and councillors for attending this evening. And I can declare this meeting closed at 6:45 p.m. Thank you.